And then went to Princeton for a PhD, from which he graduated, I suppose, last year. And he's currently a postdoc at Stanford. And today he will give a seminar about deep brains with magnetic moments of other deep brains. Am I correct?
Yeah, and other kinds of moments.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for the invitation. What do I do with this?
Just clip that. Yeah, that's fine. Anywhere. From there, that'll do the job nicely. Throw that in your pocket.
Okay. Uh-oh. Fake pockets.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That'll work as well.
There we go. Does it matter that the antenna is...
No, okay. That's fine. I think it's
okay.
Transmitted through your coat.
Great. Okay, so I'm mainly going to be talking about zero brains. These are the particle-like deep brains, and I'll tell you about some interesting physics that has to do with polarization states that these brains can have. So this is work with Carl Miller and Washington Taylor, and there's a paper from the summer. Okay, so the supergravity theories that describe string theory at low energies possess a lot of supersymmetric black hole solutions, and also solutions corresponding to extended objects, which we call supersymmetric black brain solutions. And one of the nice things about string theory is that in a lot of cases, string theory provides a microscopic understanding of these singular solutions in the supergravity theory. And the understanding is that these solutions represent the fields outside some kind of configuration of D brains. So really ever since this was realized by Polchinski in about 1995, one of the important themes in string theory has been to understand the relationship between these D brains and the corresponding supergravity black hole type solutions. So this has led to the celebrated ADS-CFT conjecture, and also an understanding of a lot of dualities in string theory. So I'm going to be talking about basically the simplest example of this correspondence, and that is the D0 brain, the particle-like brains of type 2A string theory. So there's actually several pictures of what a D0 brain is. Okay, so the first picture just comes from this classical gravity theory, type 2A supergravity, which describes the low energy physics of type 2A string theory. And there's an extremal black hole solution, which was found by Horowitz and Strominger, which was the black zero brain solution. And this is described by a metric, which depends on some harmonic function. And there are a couple of other fields also turned on solution. One of them is this Ramon one-form field, because these objects are charged under the Ramon one-form field. And the other field that's turned on is the dilaton. Okay, so the solution is all described in terms of this harmonic function. The second picture is the picture of this object in string theory. Okay, and the point is that this solution is really supposed to describe the gravitational and other fields outside a collection of these zero brains. Okay, so these are the Dirichlet brains in type 2A string theory, with a property that open strings can begin and end on them. Okay, and by studying the properties of these two objects, people were able to realize that this constant that appears in the harmonic function. So you have one kind of arbitrary constant in this picture. That should be identified with the number of zero brains sitting at the origin. Well, there's actually a third picture of what a zero brain is, and that comes from the relationship between type 2A string theory and 11-dimensional M theory. So that relationship is basically that if I have M theory and I take one of the 11 dimensions to be a small circle with a radius of R, that's equivalent to type 2A string theory with a coupling that's proportional to this radius. Okay, so in the M theory picture, what a zero brain is a massless particle which has some momentum along the compact direction. Okay, so since this direction is compact, the momentum has to be quantized, and the number of units of momentum that this massless particle carries in the compact direction is then associated with a number of zero brains in this collection. Well, there's something interesting about this last picture that wasn't really apparent from the first two pictures, and that is that we don't just have one kind of massless particle in 11-dimensional supergravity. There are actually three different types of particles: the graviton, a three-form gauge field type particle, as well as a fermionic gravitino. And each of these particles has a number of different polarization states. So just like the two polarization states of a photon, the graviton in 11 dimensions has 44 polarization states. And similarly, these other two particles have a bunch of different polarization states. So in fact, in this picture, we see that there are actually 256 ways that I can have a massless particle with a given momentum in this compact direction. Okay, so it's interesting to ask, how are these 256 states seen in these first two pictures, and what kind of consequences does that have? So from the string theory picture, the answer is not very difficult. Remember that D brains have some fields that are allowed to live on their world volumes. So in the case of the zero brain, there are some coordinate fields which just tell you where the zero brain is in the n-dimensional space. But there are also some fermionic fields that can live on a zero brain. Okay, and since this is really just a zero-dimensional object, the fermion fields have an equation of motion that essentially sets their time derivative to zero. So the Dirac equation in zero space dimensions and one time dimension just tells you that the time derivative of the fermion fields is zero. So these are really just non-dynamical fermions, but they're still operators quantum mechanically that obey an anti-commutation relation. And I'll describe in a little bit more detail later that once you take into account the operator nature of these fermions, you realize that the wave function describing a zero brain actually has to have 256 states. Okay, so we see that the polarization states in the M3 picture can be identified with the 256 quantum states of a zero brain.
Can you do the identification level supersymmetry implementations?
I'll talk later about it in more detail classifying these as representations of symmetry groups. Okay, well, what I'll talk about today is that these fermion fields that live on the world volume of a zero brain, even though they're non-dynamical, they actually have couplings to the background fields of supergravity, so to the metric and the various electromagnetic type fields. And so depending on which of the 256 states the zero brain is in, depending on the polarization state, a zero brain will actually have different physical properties. Okay, so the goal for this paper was really to classify all of the possible zero brain states and understand what their physics is. What are the physical properties of these different states? Now, what you find is that there's actually a lot of kind of interesting properties that a zero brain can have. It's maybe a much more rich picture than you would have expected. These zero brains, depending on their polarization state, carry angular momentum. They can have magnetic dipole moments. They can also have dipole moments of higher dimensional brains, for example, D2 brain dipole moments. And they could have gravitational quadrupole moments and other kinds of multipole moments of the various kinds of charges that are possible in string theory. So furthermore, going back to the very first picture of a zero brain as a classical solution of supergravity, what you realize is that there's actually not just one classical solution that corresponds to a zero brain. In fact, there's a whole family of solutions that correspond to general linear combinations of these 256 polarization states. So if I have a zero brain in a particular state, there's actually that for example, carries a dipole moment, a magnetic dipole moment, then there's a supergravity solution that displays the same long-range fields which are appropriate to that dipole moment or higher multipole moment. So we expect a whole family of exact supergravity solutions corresponding to all of these polarization states. And we'll see that these are basically going to look like black holes with all kinds of interesting types of multipole moments. So the outline for the rest of the talk is to first discuss these couplings between the world volume fermions on a D0 brain and the bulk supergravity fields. Then we'll take those couplings, use them to determine the long-range fields corresponding to an arbitrary polarization state of a zero brain. Then we'll think about these 256 states and classify them in sort of a meaningful way so that we can really see what their physical properties are. And finally, I'll consider an application of this, which is to understand the force between a pair of zero brains in arbitrary polarization states. Okay, so let's mainly focus on the case of a single zero brain. Okay, so if we start out by thinking about the low energy physics of a zero brain in flat space, then it's basically just like a free particle. The physics is described by nine coordinates since the space is nine-dimensional with time dimension. So these are just nine coordinate functions, which are functions of time. But there are also these fermion fields that I mentioned associated with a zero brain. So these are actually 16 fermion fields. And the coordinates obey the usual commutation relations between the coordinates and their conjugate momenta. And the fermions obey an anti-commutation relation. Okay, so when we quantum mechanics, we could represent this anti-commutation relation by taking these thetas to be some finite dimensional matrix. So there's a finite dimensional representation of this, and this is just the usual story with gamma matrices. This is actually the same Clifford algebra that we normally associate with gamma matrices for fermions and field theories. And in this case, since we have 16 of the fermions here, alpha and beta run from 1 to 16, we need the size of these gamma matrices to be 2 to the 16 over 2, or 256 states, 256 by 256 matrices. This is just kind of a standard formula for how large the representations of this algebra are. Okay, so in this picture, we basically just have a wave function. What this all amounts to is that a single zero brain is described by a wave function that has 256 components And basically, they're just like free particles, and all of these 256 states are basically degenerate. They do the same thing. Okay, well, now let's sort of look at the usual action that people write down for zero brains, ignoring the effects of the fermion terms, but including background fields into the story. Okay, so D-brains are normally described by these Born-Infeld actions, and for the case of a zero brain, the Born-Infeld action really just looks like the action for a charged particle in gravitational and electromagnetic fields. So there's a term which is just the integral of this gauge field over the particle world line with a charge sitting out in front. And then there's a kinetic term, which is essentially the, basically it's just the usual term for a particle in gravitational fields. But the twist is that since the zero brain actually has a mass that depends on the dilaton field, phi, we have a slightly different action. But this is the length element of the particle's world line. Okay, so that's not too interesting yet. But it turns out that there's actually a whole bunch of other terms that involve these fermion fields. Okay, so there's actually various ways to derive these couplings, and I won't really get into any of them in detail, but I'll just briefly mention a couple of them. The first way is that there's a superspace formalism where you add, in addition to these 9 or 10 space-time coordinates that the zero brain is moving through, there's a formalism where you actually imagine that there's an extra set of fermionic coordinates. So these are coordinates that obey anti-commute with each other. So it's kind of a mathematical formalism that people call superspace. And using this formula, there's actually an immediate generalization of this action, where you consider the particle moving through superspace instead of through regular space. And what happens is that each of the fields, the metric, the dilaton, and the one-form field that appear in this action kind of get promoted to these fields on superspace. So it's a very elegant formulation, and you can write down the complete action, including fermions, very simply, but it's actually quite a difficult task to actually use that formalism and try and write everything in terms of the simple ordinary component fields that you're used to. And so we were able to do that for at least up to the 2 fermion terms, and after that it seems to get very, very complicated. Another way to determine the couplings between bulk fields and the fields that live on these brains is to consider interactions between sets of zero brains. So this is related to the interactions between objects in matrix theory, or you could do a calculation directly in string theory. But the idea is that if I want to compute the long-range interaction potential between, say, 2 sets of zero brains or just a pair of zero brains, there's a simple way to do this using supergravity if I know how these objects couple to, like, the metric or the dilaton. I just need to... If there's some operator that couples to, say, the dilaton field, then... say this is the action for a zero brain, and this is the operator that we want to find. The point is that if I were to ask what the force between these 2 objects was, this term in the action would lead to a force between the objects, which would be this operator here corresponding to the first one, and this particle would have a similar coupling in its action. So I'd have an interaction which would look like this operator times this operator times some propagator for whatever this particle phi is. So the point is that there's an independent way to calculate this potential between 2 sets of zero brains without actually having to know these operators. And once you do that calculation independently, you can go back and kind of read off what these operators would have to be. Okay, so basically the point is there's various ways of actually computing these operators, and in the end what we get is a set of additional fermion terms in this action. Okay, so I'll mainly just discuss the results. Okay, and I've written things in sort of a very simple form. I've written just the terms that would be non-zero if I consider just a static zero brain sitting at the origin. Okay, so first, going back to just the non-fermion terms, in this approximation, you basically get these three terms. So this term is basically the electric potential associated with a Raman-Raman one-form field, and you can understand this being there because the zero brain is charged under this field. And similarly, because the zero brain has mass, we have a term in the action which is just the zero-zero component of the metric. And finally, we have the dilaton field, which is there because the mass depends on the dilaton. Okay, so in a sense, we can look at this action, and what we learn from it is that the zero brain has a certain number of charges. One is mass, this Raman-Raman one-form charge, and a dilaton-dependent mass. Okay, so the point is that you can read off these physical properties by looking at these, how the things couple to the background fields. Okay, so now it gets interesting when we start talking about the fermion terms. So there's a set of four terms involving fermion bilinears. Okay, so in general, the zero I component of the metric couples to the momentum of an object, and the first derivative of the zero I component of the metric couples to angular momentum. So what this term tells you is that this operator here, which I've called Jij, represents an angular momentum for the zero brain. So if I'm in a state where this fermionic operator has some particular value, then this coupling tells me that state has some kind of angular momentum or spin. So it turns out that this operator couples also to the spatial derivatives of the Raman-Raman one-form field. Again, we can read off what the physical consequence of that is, and that is that the zero brain actually has a magnetic dipole moment. Okay, so since the coefficient here, the relative coefficient is basically just one, this field and this field couple in exactly the same way, or to exactly the same operator, we learn that any zero brain that has some angular momentum also has a magnetic dipole moment. Okay, and that's kind of to be expected for a charged particle with some spin, and it's the usual story that there's some gyromagnetic ratio, and in this case the gyromagnetic ratio is one for these zero brains. So these other two couplings are very interesting because they involve fields of supergravity that didn't appear at all in the bosonic action. So what we learn when we write down these fermion terms is that even though before we really thought that the only fields that kind of came in and coupled to the zero brain were the dilaton, graviton, and one form, here what we find is that this two form field of type 2A supergravity also has a coupling, as well as this field, this three-form field, which normally only couples to two-dimensional brains, to D2 brains. Okay, so since this term is here, what we learn is that a zero brain with a non-zero value of that operator has a dipole moment of this two-brain charge. And Similarly, this term indicates another dipole moment, and this field is normally associated with a charge of a fundamental string. Okay, so we've learned by looking at these two fermion terms that we have four types of dipole moments: angular momentum, a magnetic dipole moment, a D2-brain dipole moment, and also this B-field magnetic dipole moment. So depending on what the values of these operators are in the state that you're looking at, you can have all of these possible different dipole moments. And I'll just mention a few of the terms with four fermions, the first of which is a term with two derivatives on H00. So remember that H00 was something that couples to mass. And what this term indicates is that whenever this operator has a non-zero expectation value, you have a state with a gravitational quadrupole moment. And similarly, you can have a quadrupole moment of D4-brain charge. So there's actually higher fermion terms with six fermions and eight fermions. And you can go on and sort of read off all of these different physical properties based on the couplings in the action. Okay, so the bottom line really is that whereas before, when we didn't consider the fermion terms, it looked like all of these 256 states were pretty much the same. But if I actually include the effects of the fermion terms, or look at the terms in the action involving these fermions, you realize that these particles actually have very different physics depending on the particular polarization state that you're in. Okay, and one of the ways in which the physics is different is that these polarization states actually correspond to different long-range supergravity fields. Okay, so if I have a zero brain that happens to have an angular momentum, then that's going to show up in the long-range fields. Okay, so remember that the usual supergravity solution that people write down only involved the metric and the dilaton and this one form field. But more generally, for supergravity solutions corresponding to these polarization states, all of the fields of type 2A supergravity are going to be non-zero. So it's basically a very simple exercise to determine the long-range fields. And that is the way to do it is just to essentially treat all of these terms as source terms in the gravitational action. So you kind of figure out the equations of motion for the gravity fields and the other fields. And for example, here you would have a source, basically this is just a mass term, a delta function source for H0 naught. So this is what, these are the terms that kind of led to the long range field in the bosonic solution. Basically, in a similar way, these terms are going to lead to long-range fields in the more general solutions. Okay. So you use the couplings we derived as essentially source terms, which tell you how this zero-brain source couples to all the fields, and then you use this. This is basically just the bulk or the gravity action that tells you the equations of motion for all your fields, and so using these two things, you can read off all these long range fields. So just to give you an example of what that looks like, so this is just the set of couplings that I wrote on the So this is the action for the zero brain. These are the source terms, and then this is the bulk action. Okay. Okay, so as an example, again, let's remember the bosonic solution. And there, the long-range fields fall off like 1 over r to the 7th. And that's because we have 9 space dimensions. So things like an object with mass will have a gravitational field in nine dimensions falling off, like one over r to the seventh, which is sort of analogous to the one over r type potentials in three dimensions. Okay, so just as an example, we can read off, for example, this field which normally couples to D2 brains. It wasn't at all. It was basically just zero in the normal D0 brain supergravity solution, but now it actually has this non-zero value as long as this operator here has a non-zero expectation value. So these terms are all the dipole moment fields, and just like you'd expect, they come in at one higher order in 1 over r. So the 1 over r to the 7th terms are the leading fields coming from the monopole moments, the mass and the charge. The dipole moments give you terms at 1 over r to the 8th. And similarly, these higher terms with higher powers of theta give you terms with higher powers of 1 over r. Okay. So at this point, the expressions I wrote down are really operator values. These thetas were objects that obeyed some anti-commutation relations. So far, I haven't really told you how to figure out what the numerical value of this field is for a particular polarization state. What I basically have to do is take the expectation value of this operator in the state I'm interested in, and I'll tell you exactly how to do that in a couple of transparencies. Okay, well, there's actually a nice check on these results. There's a way to determine some of these long-range supergravity solutions based on the fact that these different polarization states are related to each other by acting with broken supersymmetries. So the zero brain is a state of string theory which breaks half of the original 32 supersymmetries. Okay, so it's still a supersymmetric object. It has 16 supersymmetries, but there are, in addition, 16 broken supersymmetries. So we can actually use these broken supersymmetries to generate new solutions given an original solution like the bosonic zero brain solution. And this is very similar to how we would generate new solutions, for example, if we have a broken translation generator. So remember, well, if I have anything at a particular point, that breaks translation invariance. Okay, but I can generate a new solution by acting with the exponential of this broken translation generator. So in other words, all I'm doing is basically translating my solution to a different point. And so, you know, that's kind of seems like a trivial new solution. It's just the same solution but expanded around a different point. But when I have a broken supersymmetry generator, I can actually do just the same thing. I can generate a new solution by now taking the supersymmetry in the exponential instead of the translation generator in the exponential. And in practice, what you do is basically use the known transformation properties of all of the bosonic supergravity fields under this supersymmetry generator. So you can look those up. And so what you find is that starting from the bosonic solution and then acting with these supersymmetries, we generate a new solution. And it's again very similar to what we found in the previous slide. It's a solution that depends on this parameter epsilon, which came into the exponential here. Okay, this parameter epsilon, just like these thetas, is some fermionic parameter, and essentially we can by comparing the solutions generated in this way. And the solutions we generated in the previous transparency realized that epsilon parameter should be just identified with our theta up to some some linear relation here that you could work out. So people had actually done this kind of thing in the past and written down what they called super partner solutions for solutions that broke supersymmetries, but often never really just left the answer in terms of this parameter epsilon. Didn't really explain how you would actually compute the numerical value of this field. But now we see that this epsilon is really operator valued. It should be identified with this operator theta, and in order to actually compute real values of the fields, what we need to do is take an expectation value. What's the time, actually? Okay, great. Okay, so what we've seen is that the actions describing zero brains have fermion terms, which are built out of these basic operators, a pair of thetas connected by one of these anti-symmetric Dirac matrices. I guess I didn't really explain, but this is just some anti-symmetrized product of gamma matrices. And these are also the operators that came into the long-range supergravity solutions. So to really understand the physics of zero brains, what we need to do is understand how to evaluate the expectation values of these things in an arbitrary polarization state. Okay. So for example, the fields at 1 over r to the 8, the dipole fields, to figure out what the numerical values of those are, we just need to evaluate the expectation value of this J operator, which is basically the angular momentum operator, or the expectation value of this D operator. So what we need to do is basically come up with a useful explicit representation of these states. And the way to do that is to basically start out with this anti-commutation relation for the thetas. And there's sort of a usual way of rearranging these thetas into a pair of fermionic creation and annihilation operators. So in fact, we have 8 pairs of fermionic creation and annihilation operators, starting out with these 16 thetas. Okay, well, once we have these lambdas, the creation and annihilation operators, we can generate all the states basically by starting with some vacuum state, some Fock-based vacuum state, and then acting with creation operators. And since these are fermionic, I can only act with a creation operator once, because the square of any of these is zero. Okay, so I can have up to either zero or one of each of the 8 creation operators acting on the vacuum, and that gives me 2^8 or 256 states. So this isn't actually the most useful way to deal with these polarization states. It's actually much more natural to classify the states in the way that we normally classify particles, and that is to group them into representations of the rotation group. So in this case, the rotation group in 9 dimensions is SO9, and you find that these 256 states split up into 3 different representations of SO9. So we would call these 3 different types of particles. So the representations are this 44-dimensional representation and an 84-dimensional representation and a 128-dimensional representation. And if you remember that in the M3 picture, we also had 3 different types of massless particles. So we kind of recover this direct correspondence. You see that, again, in 10 dimensions in the string theory picture, we have one type of particle with 44 polarization states, which we can now understand as arising from the graviton in 11 dimensions, another type of particle with 84 that arises from the 3 form, and a fermionic type of zero brain that arises from this gravitino particle in 11 dimensions.
So they really form their representation of SO10?
Of SO9. So, I mean, remember a massless particle in 11 dimensions is also classified by SO9. But these are massive particles in 10 dimensions and massless particles in 11 dimensions are classified by the same group.
It's somehow like quantization of massless particles.
It's basically the you know, when you classify mass particles, you can always go to the rest frame. Okay, but massless particles you can only go to a frame with particular momentum. You have one. The little group now is one less dimension for massless particles. Okay, so it's actually most natural to rewrite these polarization states that I get from these creation operators in exactly the same way that we would describe polarization states of these 11-dimensional particles. So basically, a general bosonic zero-brain state can be described by giving a polarization matrix for an 11-dimensional graviton and a polarization tensor for this antisymmetric three-form particle. Okay, so in a similar way, you specify a general fermionic state by this polarization tensor or a gravitino particle. Okay, so this thing is basically analogous just to the complex polarization vector of a photon. So there's just slightly more complicated generalizations for these higher dimensional particles. So you can actually write a general state like this, and explicitly in terms of the creation operators, general linear combinations of those other states that I wrote down. But this is a much more convenient and compact representation. Okay, and once I have a nice way to talk about these different states, I basically now just need to figure out what the action of these various operators on the states are in order to compute their expectation values. So the basic step actually is just to figure out how this theta operator acts on one of these polarization states. So that essentially can be done by writing this theta again in terms of the creation and annihilation operators, and using the explicit representation of this thing in terms of the creation operators, basically doing a couple of explicit calculations. But the nice thing is that once you represent these states in terms of the polarization vectors, it's actually most of the result is kind of constrained by having the right transformation properties under these rotation groups. Okay, so you can use this explicit representation to determine explicitly what the action of these two operators are. So, for example, this J maps a general bosonic state to another bosonic state whose polarization tensors are related to the original ones by these relationships. So basically the point is you can figure out what the action is. It's probably not too enlightening to stare at the formulas. But once I know how to do this, I can evaluate the expectation value of any combination of these J's and D's, starting out with this, orthogonality relation. So if I wanted to compute the expectation value of D, I just stick it in there. I know now how D acts on this state, so I can get the combination of states that comes from D acting on this state, and then use this relation again to evaluate the expectation value. Okay, so while that was all technical stuff, what do you actually find? So I've just written here the relation that you actually get. So these are the expectation values that are going to determine the real numerical values of the various dipole moments and the values of the long range fields at 1 over r to the 8th. And what's interesting is that these things are all written in terms of the imaginary part of some product of these polarization tensors. You can have states that don't have any dipole moments. All you have to do is take the polarization tensors to be real. Or you can have states that have angular momentum, or you can have states with D2' dipole moments. So by just choosing these polarization tensors, I can see all of the possible kinds of dipole moments I can get. Okay. So one of the interesting things is that if you look at the kinds of states without any dipole moments, I think that probably actually have higher moments. So you could have a state with some charge but no dipole moments, but maybe some gravitational quadrupole moment. These states then are all related to different kinds of black hole solutions. So what you basically learn is that I can have this black hole solution with some angular momentum, or a black hole solution with this D2' dipole moment, or I can have a black hole with no dipole moments but a gravitational quadrupole moment. Basically, by looking at all the possible states of the theory, you can come up with predictions for all these different new types of black hole solutions, other than that are different than the original bosonic solution.
Is it true that there's a finite number of this higher quadrupole moments?
Yeah, eventually it cuts off. So I mean, I guess you could have. I think it could go up to like a 16 pole moment. I don't know what the word for that is, but there's only going to be a finite number of them.
So this looks like no fair affair.
Well, I guess that's true. Maybe you can have a no-hair theorem that only starts at 32 pole moments.
But gravitational moments, they shouldn't be cut off, right? Because you have some gravitational moments also. It would seem that why would there be a cutoff in the gravitational moments?
Well, these are just, these are fundamental moments, like the magnetic moment of an electron. And so it's almost like a charge that these things carry. But just explicitly from, it's just a point-like object. But explicitly from computing the fermion terms, you can have two fermion terms and you can have four fermion terms. But if you go high enough, the Grassmann property of these things forces it to be zero. So basically, if I have more than, if I start out with 16 fermions, I can't have more than a product of 16 of them, otherwise you're going to repeat.
So although you can have the derivatives of the graviton, you can't have the operator part.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so let's see. Okay, so I'll just quickly, I guess I'm running out of time, but I'll mention this last application, which is to kind of use our results to consider the interactions between widely separated zero brains, where the two zero brains are actually in different polarization states. Now, the kind of the old story is that before I start thinking about polarization states, that there's an exact cancellation between the force of forces between two zero brains, and that cancellation arises because the gravitational forces, which are attractive, exactly cancel the electromagnetic forces that are basically the repulsive force coming from this Raman-Raman one-form field. So we wanted to ask, well, what happens if you actually start including the effects of these polarization states? And then you start getting, instead of just this monopole type force, you get dipole forces coming in at the next order, at 1 over r to the ninth. And so all of these four types of dipole moments that we saw are going to lead to four different types of dipole forces. So what you find actually is that the spin-spin forces exactly cancel the magnetic dipole forces, and the forces associated with the two-brain dipole moment of the two brains exactly cancel this dipole moment associated with the BIJ field. So actually, regardless of what polarization state these two things are in, again, the forces precisely cancel. So this was actually expected because people have, using a matrix theory calculation, computed the exact static potential between a pair of zero brains and found that, in fact, there's a complete cancellation up to 1 over r to the 11th, but then there's a potential that involves these eight fermions. So we would have expected that all of the forces would have to cancel, and it's a nice check to see that it really does, but actually the cancellation happens in a really interesting, non-trivial way. So presumably if we were to use our results and calculate quadrupole forces and dipole-octupole forces, these would sum up to these 1 over r to the 11th, these non-zero terms at 1 over r to the 11th. Okay, so just to summarize, so we've determined the couplings between these world volume fermions and bulk supergravity fields for zero brains, and we found that these terms in the action indicate that the zero brains have various interesting physical properties, such as spin, magnetic dipole moments, two-brain dipole moments, gravitational quadrupole moments, four-brain quadrupole moments. So depending on the state that the zero brain is in, you can have all of these interesting multipole moments turned on. And basically corresponding to all of these different states, you should have supergravity solutions which display the same kinds of multipole moments. So, so we've also given an explicit representation of these polarization states and sort of provided the machinery to compute all the expectation values you'd need to in order to figure out the physics of these things. So it'd be interesting to, we've really just computed the long-range fields associated with these general states. It'd be interesting to try and find the exact supergravity solutions corresponding to these states. And basically what we're predicting is that there should be this huge family, some 228 parameter families of exact black hole solutions preserving 16 supersymmetries. So they would be more complicated than the usual D0 brain solution because actually all of the fields of 11-dimensional supergravity or 10-dimensional supergravity would be turned on, but maybe using the knowledge of the long-range fields, you could come up with an ansatz to determine some exact solutions. Okay. So finally, I'll just say that this same story really holds should be holding true for a lot of other types of situations. For example, if I have a higher dimensional brain, but it's wrapped on some compact space, here I've just shown a one brain wrapped on this some compact direction. Basically, in terms of the lower dimensional theory, this again it will just look like a particle type object, and it will correspond to a black hole type solution. And so any such configuration is going to have polarization states, which will then arise from the quantization of the fermion zero modes on this one brain or the higher dimensional brain. and you could go ahead and analyze the physical consequences of those. And so basically using these methods, you could look at all the different types of brains in string theory and predict probably a large class of different kinds of interesting black hole solutions in various dimensions carrying interesting multipole moments. Okay.
Any questions? So, can you comment on lifting for this picture in the 11 dimensions?
Yeah, okay, so the... Oops. I'll comment over here. So in 11 dimensions, there is an exact supergravity solution corresponding to a massless particle with moving in some direction. That's called this Eichelberg-Sexel supergravity solution. So it's actually a very simple if you write it down using light cone coordinates, you know, x plus equals x naught plus x 10. So say this direction is the 10 direction, and I consider a massless particle with some momentum in that direction. So if I write down light cone coordinates, then the solution is basically just g mu nu equals eta mu nu plus h mu nu, where h minus minus is some delta function. So it's like a delta function in these in the transverse directions times, I think, 1 over r to the 7th times some constant. So there's this very simple exact solution in 11-dimensional supergravity with where the only field turned on is the metric. And in some sense, this corresponds to... it's supposed to correspond to a massless particle, but again, you have 256 different kinds of massless particles. So what you really expect to see is a bunch of other solutions related to this Eichelberg-Sexel metric. And so I think in a similar way, you should be able to lift all of these zero-brain type solutions that are predicted up into 11 dimensions to get some kind of generalizations of these Eichelberg-Sexel metrics. So this actually might be a better way, a simpler way, since this solution is really simple, simpler than the bosonic zero-brain solution, it might be a better way to come up with an exact supergravity solution corresponding to all these states by starting in this picture.
Do you expect
this
one
supergravity? No, here I expect more, but just like in the zero-brain case, there's one supergravity solution that people normally write down corresponding to a massless particle. But here again, I'd expect a whole family of different solutions.
The other ones would just be dimensional reduction.
Exactly, yeah.
So what about half-brain state? The two-brain?
Well, I guess, let's see. I mean, if I want to just stick to talking about black hole solutions, then I can consider a D2 brain sort of wrapped on some torus. So if I take type 2A string theory on a torus, then and then consider a D2 brain wrapped on the torus, it just looks like again a particle or a black hole type solution. But the zero brain, or the two brain action also has some fermion terms that you can look up that we worked out. And now for this two brain, the fermions would be dynamical. They could depend on whatever the coordinates on the two brain are. Okay, but if you imagine these dimensions to be very, to be small, then again, basically it's only the zero mode of these fermions that's going to be important. So from the point of view of this particle-like thing in eight dimensions, you're again going to have a bunch of non-dynamical fermion fields associated with it that obey some quantization or commutation relation, and you could basically start from the two-brain action and again drive all these kinds of couplings and figure out what the polarization states of this thing look like.
More questions? Well, let's bring the speaker here.